This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Okay, welcome to this workshop. Glad to see you, those of you that came out. Today we have Jonathan Stolzfus with Christian Aid Ministries. He's a public relations guy there, so I'll turn the time over to him.
Good to see you all here. Thank you for coming. How many of you came straight from Richie Lauer's presentation? Good. Very good. Richie, I think, did really well with some of the do's and don'ts. He and I actually had talked beforehand so that we don't do too much of the same type of thing. But some of the comments that Richie made were very, very good, I think, and I appreciated that. What I want to do today is talk a little more about when you go out and face the donor, posture and process and that type of thing. That's what I'm going to focus. So you're connecting with your support base. How do we do it? What are some ways to, how do we do it? And how to avoid doing some of the things we shouldn't do. So that's where I'm at. There's a story that I heard years ago of a preacher that had come back from the mission field and had, he was just frustrated with years of working on the mission field and not being able to get response from the donors and sensing the needs that exist on the mission field and the lack of interest of people. And he would visit churches and preach in churches and that type of thing. And he was at a church one morning where he was really charged up, storming back and forth across the pulpit and wiping sweat and the whole business. And one of the boys, young boys in the church, looked over at his dad and said, "Who's he mad at? Who's he mad at?" And there was just the frustration was coming through in his presentation that here were people who could help and there were obvious needs from where he was coming from. But the process in which he presented that was just obvious to the child even, much less, and I'm sure there were others who knew where he was coming from and understood that. I like to tell another story, someone that I met early in my years of Christian Aid, about 20 years ago, and he had been at a presentation by someone else in the organization. It was at a critical point, and there was specifically a project that this other person was talking about. And this other person was very passionate about what he was coming across with. And this pastor told me, he said, "When I listened to him speak, I just felt like he had his hand in my back pocket." Okay? He just, there was something about the way he presented the need that it just felt to him like this guy was after his money. And he resented that, he really did. And as he was talking, he was, you know, he was hanging on. I don't know if you're afraid I was going to go after it or not, but anyway, yeah, there's some of the types of things you want to be careful with. And so some of what I want to talk about here today is that type of thing. Now, I gave you the handouts, and the handouts are for you to follow along, make notes as you want to, use to keep. I have three basic ideas when it comes to making or giving presentations to your support base. One of those, we want to keep it simple. Number two, it should be current. And number three, it should be accurate. And so, in a nutshell, this is what we're going to talk about today. Number one, it should be simple. It should be straightforward. It should be stories given in such a way that people understand what you're talking about. It shouldn't be ideas that are way over their heads. It should be very simple, straightforward. Also, it should be current. Don't talk about and use pictures that are 10 years old and stories from way back. Now, some stories are good for all time, sure. But try to keep it current. Keep it current with what's happening in your organization and give current information. And I think more important than anything is it should be accurate. There is within us, at least within me, the fierce temptation to want to skew the need and make it sound worse than it is so that it moves the sponsor to do more. That's not the good in us, okay? But there is that temptation, I think, within us to wanna to just make it worse, make it sound worse than it really is, overemphasize it, overdramatize it, to just cause people to, and we do that, I think, some with words that we use, certain words that we use, maybe stretching a story, adding details that were never there, those kinds of things. There's a temptation for us to want to do that, so keep it accurate. So basically, we're going to talk about keeping it simple some ways, keeping it current some ways, keeping it accurate. At the very end, I just have a couple other ideas that I want to throw in. Okay, keep it simple. There's a world of need that's out there, incredible needs. And those needs provide opportunities. And so basically what we're doing is taking the needs that exist and showing our donors the opportunities they have to meet those needs, okay? There's a world of needs. One of the things that I've said already is it would be good for us to just be grateful that we are among those who have rather than among those who need. I'm certainly grateful that I'm not one who is in need. I'm not worthy of that. I don't deserve that, certainly. But I'm grateful for that. And that's one of the things that I think we ought to be. The goal is to provide a way for those who have to assist those who have needs. So you really become a kind of a middleman, a spokesperson, really, for the poor, for those that have needs. You become their mouthpiece. You become a voice for them. And a very necessary voice, because there are incredible needs in our world today where people have absolutely no connections and no way of having those needs met. And often we, in public relations, we become the channel, the mouthpiece for those people to be able to speak for them. So the goal is to be able to provide a way for those who have to be able to assist those that have needs. It should be presented in a way that's easy to understand. It should be something very simple, very straightforward, and we should not have some complex system for them to... it should be simple, some way that's easy for them to understand and easy for them to respond to. One of the things that I like to suggest is that we use human interest stories. Use stories that show... the interest that we all have. At Christian Aid, we focus a lot on material aid. And so all of us have need for food. All of us have need for clothing. All of us have need for medicines, those kinds of things. And so we have a lot of opportunities to be able to use those types of stories. And they connect with us because we share the same kinds of needs and the same kinds of needs that people have. Use touching stories. And again, there are always good stories out there, and then there is the temptation to want to over-dramatize those and abuse those stories, and yeah, you just want to be careful with that. And you know, we've used many really good stories, and I know there are stories that we've told and retold. I had one story that I used years ago, back in the days of the orphanage, about something that had happened at the orphanage. It was really an ugly story in a way, but it showed some of the specific need. And I had told it and retold it, and then I went back into a community, and the pastor came to me ahead of the service, and he said, "Now, you're not going to say that story again, are you? Because our children really didn't appreciate the way that story came across." And it was a bad story. It was an ugly story. But it really showed a need. I don't think the story was wrong necessarily, but somehow it didn't sit well in that situation. Maybe it was the wrong application, the wrong place to say the story. I'm not sure. But he was clear in letting me know that I mean, he's happy to have me back. That wasn't a problem. But he wanted to make sure that I'm careful to not say that same story again. So some stories, especially when they borderline on gore and some really, really ugly stuff, and some of those kind of things happen in our world today. Another thing that I think we should be careful with is very recently someone came to me and mentioned something about being careful with stories about pregnant women, for example. He said, our children are very sensitive and they don't understand these things. And he said, is it necessary for you always to use some of those kinds of stories? And I concluded that, you know, we're different today than we were when I was a boy growing up, because some of those stories weren't told when I was a boy growing up, and they just weren't shared. They were stories that you just didn't talk about, some of those types of things. At the same time, you know, we're in a situation today where we have women in prostitution, for example, and ministries that are ministering to those types of situations. A lot of the needs that exist in places like Haiti and Liberia and some of the poorer countries in our world are due to extramarital sex, children having children, and some of those types of things. And abortion, for example, is another example. How do you talk about saving children in abortion? Christian Aid's Baby Project, Baby Moses Project. How do you talk about some of those without, you know what I mean? Okay, so, and I just say that to say, be careful. And maybe some of it is knowing who you're talking to and just being sensitive to some of those types of things. So, yeah. I like to say use names. I think using names when you talk about people that you're helping is a way of making them an individual, a person, rather than just saying this family or that type of thing. We like to use names. Sometimes we can't pronounce the names, and sometimes we mispronounce them and so forth. But use names, because it makes it personal to people. If you're on Christian Aid Ministries' prayer alert list and get the phone calls, you'll notice that recently they are giving all the prayer alerts with names changed. And it begs the question, why even put a name there if you're changing it? It's because when you use a name, it creates a personal touch with that person. Even if it's a name that has been changed, it makes it more personal, more like he actually is a person that's there rather than just saying this person. The other thing that we do a lot is short stories, and that's especially true in our newsletters. Now, some of what I'm saying here today maybe applies more to presentations, some to newsletters. But long, boring stories in newsletters usually aren't read. And so keep it short, keep it interesting, and I think people will read it more. And you, if you look at some of the changes in Christian Aid's newsletter over the years, I mean, years ago it used to be a double newsletter, four sides, and it was like 100% written, okay? Today there's a lot of pictures, a lot of captions, a lot of short stories, and that's all by design. And it's mostly because, maybe some of it is our attention span, it isn't what our parents was, I'm not sure. Well, I am sure. Actually, that's part of our problem. But that's intentional. That's something that we have done. And the other thing that we have done, I think I might hit this later. Well, here it is, the next one. Write stories so children can understand. What do they say? Reader's Digest is written so a fifth grader can understand it, I think? Third grader? Okay. You say, well, you know, a third grader is not really who's interested in my program, but, you know, often, what we find at Christian Aid, we really believe that a lot of people who read our newsletter are mothers who are reading to their children. And so you're going to want those short stories, and written so a child can understand it. Doesn't need to be a huge long story. Our editing department in our PR department is extremely brutal, and they take a long story and will chop it to pieces and get it down to where it's something that that is, yeah, it's something that, that children can understand and children can read. We really believe that a lot of the newsletters that we send out are actually mothers that are reading to our children. Now, in a public presentation, you have a variety of people that you're speaking to, but in most of what I do, it's at least half children. And we get out into a lot of schools, and I'll adjust my presentation just a little bit for schools, that type of thing. And, you know, some people say, well, why would you even go to a school? I mean, there's nobody there that's going to make any donation anyway. And what you're doing when you're targeting the children is you're really targeting the next generation. And if you can get them interested in your ministry as a child, they're going to be there when they have money and when they're able to donate down the road. The other thing we've talked a little bit about recently is this idea of children helping children. And it's kind of an interesting concept. Create ways where children can be involved in helping other children. And if you can get that idea, and this is just something we're working on. I'm doing some of this with some of the schools. But creating ways for children to be involved. This is all part of just keeping your presentation simple. Some of it, you know, I don't know. We tend to think that it needs to be elaborate, needs to be dramatic, really needs to be something that's has a lot of pizzazz to it. It doesn't really. It should be something more simple, more straightforward. And that's especially true when you get out into areas then where the people are more conservative, where you have a very conservative support base. And we do at Christian Aid. Actually, I have more presentations, maybe not more, as many presentations among the old order groups, especially schools. I get regular, every year, I get regular requests from schools, Amish schools and old order Mennonite schools that want me to come and speak to the children. It's a unique, I think, a unique opportunity. Just had a call today from a school in Ohio that Weston Showalter, one of our guys in Ohio, was in that community at a school here a couple weeks ago, and so she called and wanted someone to come again. And I sent an email to Weston saying, can you take care of this? And got another email back saying something's scheduled for next week. So, yeah, schools are a fascinating and real interesting connection for us at Christian Aid. Children helping children, the idea is a good one, I think. Another thing about keeping it simple is don't apply pressure. We shouldn't make people feel guilty or put people in a position where they feel guilty or where they feel obligated to give. I think people who give out of guilt are not going to be people who will continue to give. Because they've given out of an obligation, and often when you do that, you're going to regret it. So you don't want to apply pressure. Be careful with certain scriptures. Can you think of any scriptures that might really apply pressure to people? Okay, all right. Any others? Okay, all right. There's a couple really, really humdingers. I mean, a couple of scriptures that are really zingers. I mean, that you can use that really create pressure. One of those is John 3:16-17.
Is that he that hath this world's goods?
Yeah, he that hath this world's goods, quoted somebody. How dwelleth the love of God in him? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I have to confess that in my early years at Christian Aid Ministries, these are scriptures that I used because they're powerful scriptures, and you want to tell people that, you know, you're among those that have, and here are people that don't. And the Bible says that if you shut up your bowels of compassion, I mean, you can really crank up the pressure with a verse like that. Okay.
To share with the older people, not the children.
Okay. Actually, at Christian Aid Ministries, we have a policy saying don't use these kinds of scriptures because you're creating undue pressure for people to give. You're creating unnecessary pressure, which you don't want to do. Another one is Matthew 25, I think maybe that was quoted here already. I don't remember if it was this morning or yesterday. At Bill Mullet, I think, made reference to it. And not in the wrong way. I think he used it properly. But now, how does that one go? Can somebody help me really quick? Inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. You know, Jesus kind of pulls back the curtain of the future and shows the disciples what's going to happen in heaven when people get there. And they'll say, Jesus said, you know, when you did this to me. And they say, wait a minute, we don't even remember doing that. And, you know, all of that is really good. But you can even take that to another level when you use the end of that scripture where it says, if you don't do this, okay, he who doesn't do it to the least of these, doesn't do it to me. I mean, that really cranks it up another notch yet, too. So, yeah, all I'm saying is these are scriptures that I've used. I'll confess that. And yet at the same time, they really aren't good because you're creating undue pressure for someone and in a way forcing him into a position where you want him to do something that he may not be comfortable doing. And when you do that, I don't think you're creating long-term support, which is really what you want. Okay. So be careful with those kinds of things, those types of scriptures. You want people to want to help and not to feel like they need to help. You don't want to obligate someone. You want someone to feel like he wants to help because there's a very specific need that's there. And basically, you can accomplish that by telling people what the needs are. You really simply tell them what the needs are, explain the needs. That's really all you have to do. Let them know what the needs are. It's really a very simple process. And then you leave it up to them. You leave it between them and God. And I often have people come to me after giving a presentation about Christian Aid Ministries programs, and they'll say, you know, you have so many programs, how do we choose? Or they'll say, where really is your biggest need? Or what would you suggest that I do with this? Okay, that type of thing. And I always say, that really is a decision between you and God. That's something that you ought to make that decision on your knees between you and God. Don't let me sway that. Because everybody has their own ideas and their own ideals. You know, what someone really feels strong about, the next person's going to say, well, no, I don't want to do that. You talk to Gary Miller, for example, from Idaho, and he'll tell you that he'll never give money to an orphan child, or he'll never give money for a food parcel program. Well, he has the SALT program, so you understand why that is. But you talk to his wife, and she's okay with the SALT program, I'm sure. But her heart is really with the children, okay? So, and we're all different in that way, I think. And so what you want to do is present the need, tell people what the needs are, show them how they can respond, but never force them into a situation where they feel obligated to respond. And I think you'll have long-term supporters that really care about what you're doing. Keeping it simple, let God move through them rather than you dictating what you think they ought to be doing. Let God move through them. Your goal is to inform. I think when you provide people with information, they respond. Now, that brings up the whole subject of just providing information. And how do you do that? How important is that? I have in here that the wheel that squeaks gets the grease. This is an old slogan that my wife's uncle Davey used to use, Daveco Advertising. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of Daveco, but he was into advertising, and he said, it's the wheel that squeaks that's going to get the grease. And his idea was, if you talk about your ministry, people are going to notice it. You don't have to have a lot of fanfare. All you need to do is let people know, give them current information, and keep them up to date and informed. That's the next point. Up to date stories of need will move people to give. So, yeah, that's keeping it simple. The other thing about it is there is this temptation when you speak to want to keep telling stories and use as much time as you possibly can. And And we have one of the guys in our organization that recently, when he was asked how much time he needs, he said an hour and a half. and I don't know, probably there was a misunderstanding. Actually, what happened was I talked to the supporter later, and they said, well, they're not sure if they can fit him into their program because he said he needs an hour and a half. And it's my guess that they asked him how much time he can use, and he said, well, I can talk for an hour and a half. And truth is, he can talk for 3 hours. But they got this feeling that they somehow had to fit their program into this hour and a half, and they were... And what I found, and honestly, you know, this is the type of thing that I had to struggle with at first, too. And, you know, there's this temptation. You have a lot of good stories, a lot of information. You want to say it. You want to say it all. And you want to dump it all out, okay, to get the most effect in the end, all right? And what I found is that if you leave, and this is actually something I learned from David Troyer, the director at Christian Aid. He says, leave your audience a little hungry. You don't have to give them, you don't have to dump it all out at one time. Leave them a little hungry, and it'll get them seeking for more. They'll want more information if you do, rather than giving them too much. And I have to admit that sometimes CAM presentations can be that way. There are so many programs, you try to fit as much as you can into one presentation, and then you dump it all out, and at the end, people don't know which way to turn. You've given them so much information that they hardly know which way to go. That's not always good. In fact, that's often not good. So something we need to be careful with. Leave your audience, didn't even get that up there. Leave your audience a little hungry. All right, let's go to the next idea then. And I want to talk about just a little bit about keeping it current. Current news to me is always more interesting. But just make a comment about current news and where you get news. I'd be very, very careful where you get some of your information. I don't know how many of you use internet for information statistics and that kind of thing. There's some really excellent tools there, but what do you know about the internet?
Well, like you said, you have to be careful what you read.
It's not infallible.
Exactly. How accurate is it? Can you really depend on everything that you read? And you know you can't. So I would just be careful. Just because you read it on the internet doesn't mean it's true or accurate. Now, Weston Showalter says that the UN website and UNICEF website are two websites that are fairly accurate with a lot of good information, statistics, world statistics, and that kind of thing. I don't know if that helps you, either any of you or not, but that's what Weston says. And I use some of that information, but I use it very carefully. The other thing about a lot of information like that is statistics sometimes can be really interesting, but it can also really be meaningless to people. In other words, if I tell you that there's 10 million refugees in Syria, I mean, unless you can picture 10 million refugees, it's like, so what? You know what I mean? If I tell you that there's 10 million refugees in Syria and there's 12 million people in the state of Pennsylvania, okay, there you've made it at least a little more understandable, okay? You've brought the two together somehow, and somehow if we can picture everybody in the state of Pennsylvania, even that's hard to do. But you know, those numbers become a little more meaningful. So, yeah. Current news is always more interesting. Avoid showing the same photo repeatedly. If you saw the picture of the little boy in the broken bathtub that was on the Christian Aid Ministries annual report, I think it was 2012, maybe. Really good picture. And a really touching picture. And it was, I'm trying to think even which project was there. I can't even remember which project it was that we used that picture. That picture was part of a specific program. It wasn't the Haiti, I wonder if it wasn't the, anyway, it was a picture that we had gotten, and we ended up using it quite a bit. I think maybe overdid it a little bit. But just be careful with that type of thing. Sometimes a really good picture can say a lot, but to use it again and again and again especially if it becomes old, a year old, you can say more with other pictures. Current pictures. Good pictures can make an impression, but overuse can be counterproductive. Avoid using the same stories repeatedly. Same is true with stories. And make sure statistics are current. Another thing I would say is make sure the stories are accurate. We had a situation recently, not recently, it's probably a couple of years ago, where there was a story in Romania of, I don't remember the details of the story, but it was a really sad story. And when we heard it, we thought, wow, this is an excellent story that would really fit into our newsletter. And actually somebody went and wrote up the story and then just on impulse sent it back to Romania and said, can you verify this story? Because it was kind of an unusual story. And so some of our people there actually drove out to the village where it supposedly happened and began to check around, and no one could verify it. Nobody recognized the names, or even though we were in the right village, supposedly, no one could verify it. Now, so we still had a good story. And there's this fierce temptation to want to use it because, you know, stories have good leverage. But when you get in a situation like that, I'd say you just want to back away from that and be very careful with that type of thing. Okay. Use current events. At Christian Aid, we watch the world scene, and we do projects where there are current events. And we use current events for fundraising, not because we can make more money that way. That's not the idea. But when you have events that take place that hit the news media here in the United States, then we know our support base is hearing about this specific project and this need. And depending on how much the news media is talking about it, may make a difference as to whether it's something we want to get involved with or not. So like the Ukraine war right now is one that, of course, is in our news media here. Now, one of the benefits for Christian Aid in this situation is we're already in Ukraine, we're working there, we have a base there, and so it's very convenient for us to work there. The Haiti earthquake was another one where we had staff, we had personnel, we had a building there that we could easily convert into a hospital. We had people who were able to go, and that became a big fundraising event. There is a mission that was working in Haiti at the time of the earthquake, and had put out a newsletter about 6 weeks after the earthquake, and there was nothing in their newsletter about the earthquake. Now, a mission working in Haiti, and they're in a situation where something drastic has happened in their country, the country they're working in, and a current newsletter doesn't even mention it. They missed a unique fundraising opportunity. Now, maybe there wasn't anything they could do, but if they had any plans to do anything, and there was, I mean, there was a situation they could have, and I think they were doing something. And it's kind of an assumption that people already know it. But yeah, use current events. The Ukraine war is one of those that is certainly very current for Christian Aid. And with good connections there, it works very well for us. Now, that doesn't mean that every war is something that we're going to do fundraising for. That's not the point. But there are situations. What I'm saying is take advantage of some of those situations if you need to or can. Modern technology allows us to communicate current events, current news and events much faster. How many of you use email groups? That's not something that Christian Aid has done a lot of. We've talked a lot about doing that. But if you have a way of getting current information out to your support base through emails, we do have a website, which takes a lot of work to keep current. And if you have those kinds of tools, here again, it's just best if it's current. And something that I try to watch even myself. Sometimes I go on there and there's information on there that should be taken off. It's old. It's past. It's history. All right. Presentations should be designed to show people how the ministry is using their hard-earned money. you know, fundraising is an interesting part of an organization, and you can use fundraising to benefit your organization, to build your organization, to get people involved in helping with what you're doing. And I often say that fundraising is more about letting people know how their money was used than it is about asking for more money. And maybe it's going to generate more money. Hopefully it's going to generate more money. But I always sense an obligation on my part to let people know how past funds have been used. And a lot of what you do with reporting is that, letting people know how past funds have been used. Okay, keeping it accurate. Best not to share information if you're not completely sure. I think I already mentioned something about that. Be very careful with information if you're not absolutely sure that it's accurate. Be truthful. Stories should be verified. Information should be verified, and don't stretch stories. I think I've already pretty much hit that, but that's something that we should be very careful with. And don't print a good story if you can't verify it. Those are things we should be very, very careful with, okay? The other thing I want to mention is Photoshop. How many of you use Photoshop on some of your pictures? You work with Photoshop? It's a lot of fun. But it's you want to be very careful with that. Some years ago, there was an organization that printed a calendar. And on one of the pictures in the calendar, they had a picture of a family and a little boy. And the little boy had some kind of scribble on his, something on his t-shirt in the front. And they had gone in with Photoshop and cleaned that all off real nice. Okay? They used a smaller version of that exact same picture on the back of the calendar and forgot to change that picture. Okay? So it was on one page, but what they had done to it was on the back of the calendar. So if you're going to do Photoshop, you want to be very careful. And, you know, I'll say this, at Christian Aid, we do some of those kinds of things, clean up lettering maybe, or some things like that, if we want to use pictures. Modesty is a huge issue when you get into countries like Haiti, and you can, you know, you end up with extending dresses and covering up necklines and some of those kind of things. It's a constant battle that you have in some of those countries, and we work hard with our people to give us good pictures, give us pictures that are modest. And you know, those people live in that culture all the time and don't even think about it. But we try to be very careful. And I really suggest that you do very little Photoshop. One of the things that we've done, if there's a subject, for example, that we really want to bring out in a picture, but the background might be objectionable, just blur the background. That's a very acceptable way. Crop it, if you can. Sometimes you can crop off what's objectionable. We had a picture. Actually, if you watch the presentation, the Christian Aid presentation that's here, there's a picture of a family among the Moy people. The mother is holding a baby that's naked, and that picture was cropped just because it wasn't appropriate without cropping it. Those kind of things. So you want to be careful with that. Technology provides us with an easy path to distort and deceive. Avoid sensationalism. And again, I would say there's a lot of good stories, and I would be careful to just over-dramatize them. You don't need a lot of sensationalism, actually. Just tell the people what the needs are, explain what the needs are, how they can help, and leave it between them and God. That's really where you're at as a spokesperson for the organization. Just some other ideas real quick here right at the end. I say you want to create some dissonance. What do I mean by dissonance? Anybody? Who talked about dissonance here? Somebody, who was it that, was it David Yoder last evening that talked about playing the guitar and how he doesn't like to play the guitar if it's out of tune? What I want to say here is, in a presentation, part of what you want to do is create some, not disturbance, but unease. And I don't mean it in a dramatic way, but you want to push people into a situation where they sense some obligation. Now, this might be sound counter to what I had said earlier, but unless you can help people to see that what we have is so much better than what others, and there are things that we can do to help other people. So all I'm saying here is, it is good. It can be good to create some unease, to say things and maybe show pictures that would help people to feel a little uneasy. We should, I think. The other thing that I like to say is that we should have an exit strategy. Anytime you go into any presentation, you should have a goal, what you want that presentation to do. Okay? Anytime you preach a sermon, if you preach sermons, you're not preaching just random. You shouldn't be. You should have a goal where you want to move the people, where you want to move them to, or you're pushing people in a certain direction. You did very well with that this morning, Clayton. You had a plan, and that's what I'm talking about. Presentations should have an exit strategy, and by that I mean there's something that you want the people to do when they leave. That's the exit strategy, okay? The goal should be to move people, okay? And when you do a presentation, you face the audience. This is something that I've just always done. Sometimes I go to set up a presentation at a church, and the people will bring a chair out right behind the projector and say, you want to sit here? Oh, I don't want to sit there. I want to stand in front of the people, and I want to look at the people as I speak. And in very rare situations will I do anything otherwise. I'm not saying there's not a time for that, but you want to face the audience. Also, I recommend that every presentation should have a question and answer time, a Q&A. Now, there are times where that's inappropriate. If you have 500 people or more, it's going to be very difficult to even hear a question. There may not be, you may not do it in every situation, but I do suggest Q&A times. Just a couple of things about a question and answer time. Whenever you give opportunity for people to ask questions, you should always repeat the question. And there are two reasons why you should do that. Number one, you want to make sure everybody hears the question, otherwise the answer doesn't mean anything. It's completely meaningless. All they heard was the one side of the dialogue, and it's meaningless. The other reason is you want to make sure you got the question right. You understood the question. That's one of the reasons you repeat the question back to the people. So, we have a Q&A here. What are your questions? What do we have? 5 minutes? 2 minutes? 5 minutes? We have till 3 o'clock. Any questions?
I suppose you're busy enough filling in the people who ask you to come, but you're not out looking for new opportunities, I guess.
No, I mean, we're open.
Okay, so help us, those of us who don't have these requests coming very often, to come and present your ministry or church. How do we get it?
I'm missing your question, sorry.
How do you open the door?
Yeah.
So you have someone who you would like to go to their church,
right,
and give a presentation. Okay, good question. How do you get in the door? How do you find the opportunity, or where do you get? How do you get to a point? Okay, Christian Aid does it several ways. One of the things that we do is we announce it in our newsletter that we have speakers that are available. Okay, and we'll give a list of the types of speakers that we have. Right now we have Billboard Evangelism, Middle East Ministries, someone for estate planning, CAM updates, and so forth, okay? And we'll say, if you're interested, give us a call. So that's one way. Honestly, that doesn't generate a lot of response for Christian Aid. It doesn't. So maybe we get one response in Texas. Somebody wants us to come. Well, I don't want to go to Texas for one meeting. I'll go for a week, because that's more worthwhile. So how do you get the rest? In some situations, what we'll do in that situation, I use the CLP's Mennonite directory, and I'll find all the churches in Texas, and I'll send letters saying, this is what we're doing, we have a request, we're coming into your area. The other thing we'll find maybe is a list of supporting churches that are giving to Christian Aid, and we'll include those also. And we'll say, we're coming into your area, are you interested? And the one thing that we never do is say, we're coming, or call somebody and say, we want to come, when can we visit your church? Christian Aid doesn't do that. I'm not saying that's wrong, but that's not our style, that's not our approach. We'll say, we're available, we're coming through your community. If you would like, we'd be happy to stop. And often that generates, I mean, I can send out 10 letters and get four or five, pretty sure. Now, those are churches that I've connected with previously. They're on our support donor list, maybe, that type of thing. So we do a lot through letters. And we may get in a situation, right now we have Weston working on a string of meetings for Johnny down in South Carolina and Georgia. And he has three meetings, which is borderline. I mean, we can send him for three, but we'd love to have 10. And he has the time for 10. And we're pushing a deadline now. We want to advertise the meetings, and we want to do that about a month ahead. So what do you do now? Well, we can't send letters, but can we make phone calls? And in some cases, we will do that, yeah. Now, there I won't call random churches. There I'll call churches that I've been at previously. Or churches I know that are interested, I'll call and say, we have someone coming through, or I'm coming through, are you open? And then I'm very quick to say, please say if you don't want, okay? I never want them to be obligated. I never push them to a point of obligation. I want them to want me to come. And sometimes they'll say, well, no, it doesn't work, or we want you to come, but not now, or... I'll leave a voicemail, never get back, and that's okay. That's all right. It's not a problem. So we're very careful not to obligate someone. The last thing that we will do is call and say, we're coming. When can we come? We want to plan a meeting. No. That's not our style. And I'm not saying that's wrong. You know, if you have support base, people you know who are interested and supportive, and you want to do something like that, there isn't anything wrong with that necessarily. I'm just saying that's not the way CAM does it. Someone else, quickly. What do we got? 1 minute? Okay. There's a lot of other things we could talk about. One of those I'd like to just mention, and Mark, your presence here brings this one up, because I think this is a real serious one. If you do any fundraising, you get out. How do you handle funds that are given to you, especially cash donations that are given to you? What we do at Christian Aid is we say, number one, you never take a wad of cash from someone. That's not been counted, and that's not been documented. And I carry with me a card giving information where the meeting was, what the date was, what the amount was that's in the envelope, and they've signed it and given me a phone number. And if I get back and I'm $100 short, I know who to call. That's not to say you can fix the problem at that point, but it does make me accountable. Because I'm bringing money back, and I do a lot of that, honestly. We bring money back, and it's cash, and you want to be completely accountable to your to those over you on how you've handled cash like that. In fact, I really prefer if they take it, write the check, and send it rather than me taking it along. The other thing we do is a lot of books, and anyway, I'm out of time, but book donations and that type of thing is always cash, too.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.